The scripture reading this morning will be from Psalms 105, verses 1 through 22. Give thanks to the Lord, call on his name. Make known among the nations what he has done. Sing to him, sing praise to him. Tell of all his wonderful acts. Glory in his holy name. Let the hearts of those who seek the Lord rejoice. Look to the Lord and his strength. Seek his face always. Remember the wonders he has done, his miracles, and the judgment he pronounced. O descendants of Abraham, his servant, O sons of Jacob, his chosen ones, he is the Lord our God. His judgments are in all the earth. He remembers his covenant forever, the words he commanded for 1,000 generations, the covenant he made with Abraham, the oath he swore to Isaac. He confirmed it to Jacob as a decree, to Israel as an everlasting covenant. To you I will give the land of Canaan as the portion you will inherit. When they were but few in number, few indeed, and strangers in it, they wandered from nation to nation, from one kingdom to another. He allowed no one to oppress them. For their sake he rebuked kings. Do not touch my anointed ones. Do my prophets no harm. He called down famine on the land and destroyed all their supplies of food. And he sent a man before them, Joseph, sold as a slave. They bruised his feet with shackles. His neck was put in irons. Till he foretold what came to pass, till the word of the Lord proved him true. The king sent and released him. The ruler of peoples set him free. They made him master of his household, ruler over all he possessed, to instruct his princes as he pleased, and to teach his elders wisdom.
It's a made-for-movies story, isn't it? It has an aged father who dotes on a young son. It has extreme sibling hatred. It has great hardships. It has injustice. It has a rags-to-riches rise. It has blessings from God, family reconciliation, and then finally a happy ending for everyone. It's the Bible story of Joseph. As the story begins, 17-year-old Joseph tells his family about his dreams in which his family bows down to him. Those dreams and their father's favoring of Joseph cause his brothers to hate him. I suspect if you have siblings, you understand something of sibling rivalry and how this is really over the top. Their father, Jacob, has four wives, and he has sons by each of these four wives. And Joseph is the son of Jacob's favored wife, and next to the youngest, Benjamin. And so this is the kid brother, the next to the youngest, the one who it seems is pretty much spoiled by his father. Jacob sends Joseph, of all people it seems, to check on his other sons. Enraged with jealousy, some of them want to kill him, but other cooler heads prevail, I guess you can call it that, and they decide instead to sell him to slave traders. And then his brothers lie to their father that they found his coat covered in animal blood and that Joseph is dead. Taken to Egypt, Joseph is sold to the captain of Pharaoh's guard, Potiphar. Because God is with him, Joseph is quickly placed in charge of Potiphar's properties. Potiphar's wife tries to seduce Joseph, but Joseph refuses her. And he does so on two grounds. One, that to have sexual relations with her would be a sin against her husband Potiphar. But even on a larger scale, it would be a sin against God. Rejected and vindictive, she tells her husband that Joseph tried to rape her, and so Potiphar has Joseph imprisoned. But because God is with him, the prison warden soon puts Joseph in charge of all of the other prisoners and, in fact, everything that goes on within the prison. Sometime later, Pharaoh's cupbearer and his chief baker displease him, and he has them put in prison. But in a while, both men have a troubling night because they've had troubling dreams, both on the same night. And they tell them to Joseph. Joseph is blessed by God with the ability to interpret those dreams. He says that the cupbearer would be restored to his position by Pharaoh, but the chief baker would be hung. As things develop in the story, both interpretations come true for both men. 2 years go by. Joseph is still in prison. But Pharaoh now has two troubling dreams. He calls his wise men and magicians to interpret them, but none of them can make heads nor tails out of those dreams. But then the cupbearer suddenly remembers Joseph. Joseph, the one who had interpreted his dreams, it turned out to be for his benefit. And he tells Pharaoh about this man in prison who has this uncanny knack for interpreting dreams. The Pharaoh calls for Joseph to be brought from the prison to him. And there Pharaoh recounts these dreams. Joseph assures him that God will provide the answers. After hearing Pharaoh's dreams, Joseph tells Pharaoh in Genesis chapter 41, and beginning with verse 28 and on through verse 40, these things. "It is just as I said to Pharaoh. God has shown Pharaoh what he is about to do. 7 years of great abundance are coming throughout the land of Egypt, but 7 years of famine will follow them. Then all the abundance in Egypt will be forgotten, and the famine will ravage the land. The abundance in the land will not be remembered because the famine that follows it will be so severe. The reason the dream was given to Pharaoh in two forms is that the matter has been firmly declared by God, and God will do it soon. And now, let Pharaoh look for a discerning and wise man and put him in charge of the land of Egypt. Let Pharaoh appoint commissioners over the land to take a fifth of the harvest of Egypt during the 7 years of abundance. They should collect all the food of these good years that are coming and store up the grain under the authority of Pharaoh to be kept in the cities for food. This food should be held in reserve for the country to be used during the 7 years of famine that will come upon Egypt so that the country may not be ruined by the famine." The plan seemed good to Pharaoh and to all his officials. So Pharaoh asked them, "Can we find anyone like this man, one in whom is the Spirit of God?" Then Pharaoh said to Joseph, "Since God has made all this known to you, there is no one so discerning and wise as you. You shall be in charge of my palace, and all my people are to submit to your orders. Only with respect to the throne will I be greater than you." After all that Joseph had been through, after all this long delay, after all of the mistreatment, after all of the forgetting, it seems, not only by people, but by God, Joseph, at the very beginning, announces that this is the plan of God, that God will be in the interpreter of it, that God will be the one who orchestrates all of it, and that God did this by way of his plans. And so because God is with him, Joseph becomes governor of Egypt, and everything develops just as Joseph interpreted Pharaoh's dreams. Because the famine was widespread, people from other countries came to Egypt for food, including 10 of Joseph's brothers coming down from Canaan. Joseph immediately recognizes them, but this has now been 22 years since they've last seen him. When they saw him, he was just in his late teens. Now he's a man of 39 years old. When they saw him, he was in the clothing and the hairstyles and all that went with the culture of one of Jacob's sons, someone living in Canaan. But now he's in the clothing and the dress and the styles and the culture of Egypt. They haven't seen him in a long time, and he looks nothing like they remember. So they do not recognize him. Joseph puts his brothers through a series of deceptions in order to find out about his younger brother Benjamin and his father Jacob. Finally, his emotions overtake him. He can stand it no longer. And in Genesis chapter 45, in verses 3 through 11, we're told that Joseph said to his brothers, "I am Joseph. Is my father still living? But his brothers were not able to answer him because they were terrified at his presence. Then Joseph said to his brothers, come close to me. When they had done so, he said, I am your brother Joseph, the one you sold into Egypt. And now, do not be distressed and do not be angry with yourselves for selling me here, because it was to save lives that God sent me ahead of you. For 2 years now there has been famine in the land, and for the next 5 years there will not be plowing and reaping. But God sent me ahead of you to preserve for you a remnant on earth and to save your lives by a great deliverance. So then, it was not you who sent me here, but God. He made me father to Pharaoh, lord of his entire household, and ruler of all Egypt. Now, hurry back to my father and say to him, this is what your son Joseph says, God has made me lord of all Egypt. Come down to me, don't delay. You shall live in the region of Goshen and be near me. You, your children and grandchildren, your flocks and herds, and all you have, I will provide for you here because 5 years of famine are still to come. Otherwise, you and your household and all who belong to you will become destitute. Well, as the story continues, Joseph's brothers return to their father, and they tell him what has happened. Overjoyed, he and all of his family come to Egypt. Pharaoh gives them the best land that is available to them, and he allows them there to graze their sheep. Jacob and Joseph, as we continue the story, live out their lives there with their families. But just before Joseph dies, Genesis chapter 50, verses 24 and 25 tell us this. Then Joseph said to his brothers, I am about to die, but God will surely come to your aid and take you up out of this land to the land he promised on oath to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And Joseph made the sons of Israel swear on oath and said to them, God will surely come to your aid, and then you must carry my bones up from this place. What a great story, isn't it? What a great story. And the ending lays the foundation for a great sequel, doesn't it? Well, we're going to get into that next week, or actually the week after. But as we realize that this is a real story about real people, we have to ask serious questions. Questions like, why did God allow the bad things to happen, especially to Joseph? Joseph didn't deserve these. Yeah, He was a bit of a smart aleck, it looks like. He was a bit of a spoiled kid, but why did God allow these bad things, really bad things, to happen to Joseph? If we were in place of God and we were arranging this story, would we have done it this way? Through the course of Joseph's life, through the course of these bad things that happened to him, Joseph learned and matured, both spiritually and otherwise, as a result of these experiences, as a result of the bad times as well as the good times. Through his experiences, God was systematically progressing with the fulfillment of all of his plans for his people. But you can look at this and say, but Joseph was treated unjustly over and over, first by his brothers, then by Potiphar's wife. And then because Potiphar believed his wife, he was treated unjustly by Potiphar. And then he was treated unjustly by Pharaoh's cupbearer, who forgot about him. And yet, each time when it seemed that God had abandoned him, Joseph placed his trust in God. And remember, Joseph has no idea what's going to happen. He's just living out his life in what we call this lower story, life here on earth, just trying to make it. And he doesn't see what God has planned, this upper story that's a complete plan already in God's mind. In the painful times of our lives, our story, like Joseph's, is not over. We must align our lower story with God's upper story. God's loving plans for us that transcend what happens here, whether good or bad, whether we understand it or not. And likely we don't and won't. Because Joseph did align himself with God, because he trusted in God regardless, God was with him in everything he experienced. That's why Joseph was put in charge of Potiphar's property. That's why Joseph was put in charge of the prisoners. That's why Joseph was put in charge, finally, of all Egypt. And that raises another question, really, when we think about it. We keep seeing Joseph being in charge, in charge, in charge. But who was in charge of Joseph's life? Was it his father? Was it his brothers? Was it Potiphar? Was it the prison warden? Was it Pharaoh? Or was it Joseph? Well, at different times, in different ways, each of these were in charge of Joseph's life. Was the devil in charge of Joseph's life at any point in time? No, he was not. Because Joseph never submitted to Satan. He never threw in the towel. He never allowed the temptations that were given to him to be ones he bought into. So was God in charge of Joseph's life? Yes, always. Because Joseph entrusted himself and his life to God. Be it good times or awful times, he entrusted himself to God. But God was not only in charge of Joseph's life, but he was in control of everything that happened in Joseph's life. God was working through Joseph's life to accomplish his plans and purposes in fulfillment of his covenant promises to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and on down through Joseph. In Genesis 45 and verse 7, remember, Joseph told his brothers, "God sent me ahead of you to preserve for you a remnant on earth and to save your lives by a great deliverance." Now, in retrospect, after all these years of difficulty, of being uprooted and displaced from his family and his country and his culture and all that he knew, and thrown into a place where he didn't even speak the language, mistreated there over and over, finally now, through the rearview mirror, Joseph can look back and see God's upper story has been at work all this while, these 22 years. God has been in charge of everything. God has been in control of everything. In his book, God's Big Picture, Vaughn Roberts observes, "God always overrules to ensure that his gospel promises are protected. We may not always understand how he does this." And to that, you and I can say under our breaths a hearty amen, can't we? How many times do we find ourselves saying, "You know, I want to trust God, and I guess God knows what he's doing, but it sure has me baffled. I don't know how he can bring about his will out of this mess that's going on in my life or in the world as a whole." Joseph served a vital role in God's upper story by saving his people from death. And through Joseph's life, God revealed his ability to transform life's worst events into a great witness of his faithfulness, of his power, of his provision, and of his compassion on human beings. Not just his people, but on all people. But God didn't tell Joseph until later in his life that Joseph was fulfilling a vital role in God's plans. It wasn't necessary, you see, that Joseph know in advance. The only thing that was really necessary for Joseph was to trust God regardless. If we'll allow him, God will work in the details of our lives, our imperfect lives, in order to accomplish his good purposes. You think about the context of Joseph as we first meet him. God used Jacob's dysfunctional family to further his plans, God's plans, for a perfect nation. And the question becomes for us in simple terms, how do you do that? How do you take such a mess of a family, imperfect people, and create such a united, beautiful, perfect nation that God had in mind? In Genesis 46 and verses 1 through 4, God told Jacob, says, Israel set out with all that was his, and when he reached Beersheba, he offered sacrifices to the God of his father Isaac. And God spoke to Israel in a vision at night and said, Jacob, Jacob. Here I am, he replied. I am God, the God of your father, he said. Do not be afraid to go down to Egypt, for I will make you into a great nation there. I will go down to Egypt with you, and I will surely bring you back again. And Joseph's own hand will close your eyes. It must have seemed confusing to Jacob. He had heard the stories from his father that had come from his grandfather about those great promises that God had made to Abram. For not only Abram, but for all of his descendants, that there would be land, that land of Canaan would be that land. And now Jacob's leaving that land. Lord, what's going on here? How are you developing these plans? This doesn't seem right. Why don't we grow into a great nation here? That would make sense to me, Lord. But God knows exactly what he's doing. He's fulfilling his plans perfectly. So Joseph's story is a perfect example of the upper and lower story concepts. Joseph had to live one day at a time in trust of God's care as each day brought the unknown to him. Only later did he learn that God was moving in his life to bring his promises to pass. He had 22 difficult years, but 71 delightful years. When he saw how God's upper story was at work in his own lower story, the memories of his difficulties faded, and his life was richer. If ever he had entrusted himself to God before during the difficult times, now, in retrospect, through that rearview mirror of life's experiences, how much more he entrusted himself to God. In our lower story, you and I give most of our attention to the moment-by-moment events of our lives. We're just trying to make it through, aren't we? Day by day, something comes up. Some days it's good days, and some days we'd rather just skip it and move on to the next one. Or maybe a next week, or a next month, or a next year, because we know that what's happening that day may have longer implications. But in his upper story, God is constantly working through us, all around us, and yes, even despite us, to fulfill his upper story purposes. His plans, his loving plans, for our blessing, our forever blessing. Joseph chose to believe in and entrust himself to and honorably serve God as a way of life. Wherever he was, whatever age he was, and remember, this starts early as a teenager, whatever blessing would come, Joseph was God's servant. He chose to yield his entire life to God so that God was in charge of all of his life. Really raises a question for you and me, doesn't it? Who or what is in charge of your life, of my life? How's that working out? How about God being in charge of our lives, of your life, of my life, beginning today? If we can help you to make that a reality, we urge you to come forward as we stand and sing this song.